I touched the mic.
I know.
Faux pas.
I heard it.
Don't ever, ever.
No, pop ever. Filter, not faux pas.
Lord, are we ever going to record this show?
No.
What time do we have until?
4:30.
Oh, we kill a lot more time. Hit the Miss Piggy.
Kermit!
Miss Piggy, welcome!
Ozzy Osbourne? Boy, did I open the wrong door. sorry to bother you.
Oh, Miss Piggy, you're not bothering me at all. Stick around, we're gonna rock!
Ozzy, chill.
Stick around, babe. We're gonna rock the place down. Come on!
Oh, you're going to sing to me?
Yeah, me and you.
It's odd music pairings on All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. I'm here with Robin Hilton. I'm here with Stephen Thompson. And I'm also here with Lindsay Sanchez. Lindsay's our intern. This is her debut on All Songs Considered. And we are here to talk about crazy good, crazy bad, odd music pairings here on All Songs Considered. This is... shall I?
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, is it going to get better than this, folks?
I feel like with the Muppets, if you appear on the Muppets, it actually enhances your credibility.
Oh, yeah, they had musical guests on all the time. You know, John...
Well, John Denver.
You're going to say John Denver. On. That yeah, totally John Denver upped his credibility. Totally,
no, yeah. When I was 7 years old in 1979, I dressed as Alice Cooper for Halloween because he had been on The Muppet Show.
Oh, wow. Absolutely, yeah.
So So would you call that a successful musical pairing, Stephen?
I absolutely would.
Yeah, me too.
And it definitely raised his stature. Why don't you start us off, Stephen?
Okay, well, I mean, one of the things that sort of inspired us to have this discussion in the first place was we got a CD in by a band called Blue Water White Death. And it features Jonathan Myberg, who's the lead singer of Shearwater and one of my favorite singers, and a guy named Jamie Stewart, who is the lead singer in a group called Juju. Which is
not to be confused with Zuzu's Petals and James Stewart, right?
Correct. From Juju, spelled X-I-U, X-I-U. And Juju makes this very sort of dissonant, arty, freak show music, and it's never really connected with me. And so trying to imagine, you know, sort of what sort of record would the two of them make together, and we were all sort of marveling at, you know, what on earth is this record going to sound like? And ultimately, it sort of meets nicely in the middle. It sort of brings out the experimental side of Jonathan Myberg, and it brings out the sort of prettier side of Jamie Stewart.
Let's hear a little. I skimmed this record earlier because it's what got me started on the blog post. And by the way, there's a whole list of interesting posts on the blog post, some of which we'll hit on today, some of which we won't, some that everybody can add to. It wasn't an easy listen for sure, but I just love listening to Myberg's voice. I think what it is, this is probably a good headphone record.
Absolutely. And it's sort of, you have the kind of more difficult sound mixed with that really grandiose, kind of sweeping, pretty, atmospheric beauty. Mm-hmm. And so I like the fact that, I mean, there's a point about halfway through that song, and obviously we're just playing fragments here, but you get about halfway through that song where all of a sudden there's just this grunge, and you're sort of reminded that you're not listening to something that's, you're not listening to an easy record at all.
And reminder also that the whole song will be online at npr.org/allsongs. Lindsay Sanchez.
How's it going?
I'm doing fine. So what do you got for us?
Well, to go in a completely different direction.
I'm bored already.
Yeah, it should be pointed out that Lindsay is going to be expected to instantly be as beloved as the woman she is momentarily replacing.
And we had Carrie, hounds on me, and we had Carrie Mail's shoes in here, so Lindsay's wearing Carrie's shoes. But this will just be easy.
Very weird.
This is not an easy role to fill. I'm a little nervous. All right. My choice is Missy Elliott featuring Nelly Furtado on Get Your Freak On. And I had to fight with Robin a little bit on this one earlier.
What was the fight about?
I didn't say it was bad. I just said it didn't seem like a completely odd, you know, complete surprise pairing.
It's not necessarily an odd pairing, but it's an important pairing because this was Nelly Furtado's first breakout with hip-hop experimentation. Prior to this, she was very much cemented in this poppy singer-songwriter sort of genre.
So you're going to break the rules right from the get-go.
Yeah.
This is your opening salvo. This is your shot across the bow.
But, I mean, and then this was released in 2001. 5 years later, she completely redoes herself. She does the album Loose with Timbaland, and it all comes back to Get Your Freak On with Missy Elliott.
Okay, let's hear it.
I'm the chief bed banging with the top down low on my floor cause it's so fresh. Like B-boys with vests, white runners carve chests. I run like the breeze, who catches life but sometimes getting me, you know what I mean? There's truth, I go, there's a rhyme, I will tell it, a story, I'll defend it, Mr. Coming and I land it. Hell, where did you come from? This international daughter song, so get your hands up like this, huh, until your party's just begun. So come over to my house and that's where this song from. A lust for life in the West Coast breeze. Yeah, and Missy's the woman who always be cooking. So something for Nelly to come dip a vibe in. From BC to D-Dot and around the world come. Giddy up, back up to my girl. Oh.
Sounds like a Chinese lute going on there. Lindsay, do you know anything about the instrumentation, how this came about?
Yeah, it's based in some Indian Punjabi beats.
Okay.
This was Missy Elliott's first track where she kind of experimented with this, and she really popularized a sort of worldly sound in pop hip-hop. So I think it's a really important record and inspired a lot of other artists to go in this route and, you know, experiment a little bit. I like it.
This was definitely an enormously influential record. And I mean, I would imagine for you, Lindsay, given that you were probably, what, about 10 when this came out?
I was 12.
12, yeah.
So that's why
she looks younger than she is.
I had no response in that Muppets thing. I never watched it.
You're like, Muppets? Oh, from the commercials?
Did you really not ever see the Muppet Show?
I mean, I saw it. I don't really remember
devastating.
It.
Devastating.
Yeah.
They're on DVD.
It's the new face of NPR.
Let's see. So you were maybe, Lindsay, you were maybe 4 or 5 when this movie came out.
We're just going to do this the entire show.
No, this is a song that was on the soundtrack to Dead Man Walking, a film that came out in 1995, and it's Eddie Vedder and Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan. And they worked together a number of times over the years. It was a total surprise to me when I first heard the song that they did together for that soundtrack. But I think they've just got just a perfect pairing of their voices. And apparently this was, Tim Robbins directed the film, and apparently it was his idea to bring the two together, and I just thought it worked brilliantly. And this is one of a couple songs they did for that soundtrack. It's called The Face of Love.
Thank you.
I think one of the great things when you have these odd pairings, one of the great things that happens is that you frequently are introduced to artists you otherwise would have never listened to. And in this case, I wasn't a huge Pearl Jam fan, but I certainly knew their music and knew Eddie Vedder, and this introduced me to Nusrat's music.
For me, it was a flip opposite. For umpteen years, I'd been listening to Nusrat. He's my favorite singer, and I had 12, 15 records of
that.
His. I know. I love this pairing, but I wasn't very aware of Pearl Jam even.
Yeah.
I mean, I let go of pop music a lot and was really soaked myself in world music and writing music and stuff like that for a chunk of time right around here. And I loved Eddie Vedder's voice, and I thought it just worked perfectly in this pairing.
It really does. And he's got a new song that we heard that we both really liked coming out for this new movie. Eat, Pray, Love. Yeah,
it's a great, brilliant song, and I like his voice outside of Pearl Jam still more than anything with Pearl Jam. Sorry, Pearl Jam folks.
No, I feel the same way too.
Emails.
What's interesting to me hearing that track, and anytime I hear Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan's music, I always think of Jeff Buckley, who was clearly enormously influenced by him, and a lot of the same.
Buckley was influenced by
yeah, oh man, oh the mail we would get if people thought I was saying the opposite. But, and two picks in a row with tablas in them.
Oh, cool.
Am I right?
Yeah. I want to do one that is probably, I said this, I brought this up to Lars, that I thought maybe I would play the Dylan and Johnny Cash, you know, North Country, Girl from North Country song as an odd pairing, and he's looked at me and said that seems kind of like a normal pairing. And
who is Lars?
Oh yes, Lars. Lars Gottridge, who here works at NPR Music. And he sits across from me and said, and I told him that, and he said, that seems like a normal pairing, not an odd pairing. But it wasn't. It was an incredibly odd pairing at the time. Johnny Cash, country music, Bob Dylan, folk music. There's a line that those things cross more in old timey, but there was also a line, and this isn't to put Johnny Cash quite in that box, but I think that a lot of people who were more hippie and left-wing oriented back in those days thought of folks from Nashville and the kind of music that Johnny Cash and others made as more right-wing and redneck. I mean, this is the extreme of it. And for that coming together, that was very strange. It was, you know, it was right around the time where country music was starting to creep into rock with the Byrds and Sweetheart of the Rodeo. There was a lot of country collaborations starting, but it didn't really exist much before then. And so this was pretty amazing collaboration. They got together. Johnny Cash was recording in a studio when Bob Dylan was recording Nashville Skyline in Nashville, and Johnny Cash sat in. They did a whole number of songs together. None of them worked. This was the only one that they thought salvageable. And even it, when you listen to it, you hear they get the words wrong, and it just sounds really loose. But it's still charming and lovely and wonderful. It's a Girl from North Country, Bob Dylan, Johnny Cash.
Mm-hmm. if you're traveling to the North Country Fair, where the winds hit heavy on the borderline, remember me to one who lives there. For she once was a true love of mine.
See for me that her hair's hanging down. It curls and falls all down her breast. See for me that her hair's hanging down. That's the way I remember her best.
If you go when the snowflakes fall, when the rivers freeze and summer ends, please see for me if she's wearing a coat so warm to keep her from the howling.
If you're traveling in the North Country Fair,
where the winds hit heavy
on the borderline, please say hello to one who lives there. For she was once a true love of mine.
I love that. Love that so much. Bob Dylan, Johnny Cash from Nashville Skyline doing The Girl from North Country, a song Dylan recorded back in the early 60s and he and Johnny did together.
I like that track.
Yeah,
I had to warm up to it initially.
Yeah, that whole record was a tough one to warm up to because Dylan's voice sounded different, the material was different, the players were different. Still a great record, still holds up. The whole thing runs about 28 minutes long, I think, the entire record. I'd like to do some clunkers, or at least ones that I think are clunkers, and maybe you think are clunkers. Odd pairings that just, like, not only are you scratch your head and go, what the heck, you got to be kidding me, but ones that in the end when you said, yeah, they don't work. Now, the couple of ones that I scratched my head at and think wouldn't work would be the Robert Plant and Alison Krauss, but did work. But let's do some ones that... Not Miss Piggy, but...
Or the M-word, Zooey Deschanel.
Right. Yeah,
Lots of people think that record works.
I know. I'm apparently the only one who thinks it doesn't.
I don't think you're the only one. But I'd much rather listen to an M-word record by as lonesome. I'd much rather listen to him.
Than she.
Yeah. Lindsay?
Oh, you want my clunker?
I do want your clunker.
All right. I went with Aretha Franklin... featuring George Michael on I Knew You Were Waiting For Me.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, this track was suggested to me by a friend, I think, who takes it as a sincere hit, which a lot of people did because it was her first number one single since Respect, I believe.
Wow. This was a gargantuan hit.
Yeah.
When I was, you know, a teenager.
So why do you think it's a clunker?
Because when I hear Aretha Franklin, I want to hear Chain of Fools. Mm-hmm. I want to hear Respect. And this is the house that Jack built. My favorite song by Aretha. It's just so 80s. And I'm really glad I wasn't aware of that decade because I didn't like much coming out of it.
Oh, here come those 80s writers again.
Oh, yeah.
So, and you know, it's even...
Did you ever hear our 80s show?
No.
Oh,
I'm
man.
Glad.
Yeah, well, you should see the email.
Then you're one of the few people who didn't write us hate mail about it.
I got to say, I'm just sitting here and I'm feeling the life drain out of me.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's hit it.
Oh.
I'm leaving mics open for it.
What is that effect on the drums and the guitar that's about to come in? Yeah.
Oh.
That's just the 80s.
It's a Yamaha DX7.
Bless you, Bob.
Let's listen to a little bit of it.
Ah, that's enough.
No.
Let it ride.
Let it ride.
Like a warrior that fights and wins the battle, I know the taste of victory.
is an this is an endurance test.
You wanted clunkers.
I pulled the fader down, but Steven super glued my finger, so I can't pull the fader down. He really likes this one, right, Steve?
Yeah, thank you, Bob. By no means should you stop this.
Yeah, this is, first of all, I'd like to point out there is not a single real instrument in that entire song.
I was
going to
say, that all sounds like electric instruments.
It is 100 manufactured pop from a computer or something. But no, so when I saw that Lindsay had picked this song, I had to ask her over to my desk and just say, listen, I got to ask you this question. Yeah. Do you like this song because it's ironic that, you know, it's so bad that it's good, or do you genuinely like this song? And, you know, because I think so many people pick music like this. I'm not saying pick. You know, all the people we have on the show picks music like this because it's cool. It's so bad it's cool to love it, you know?
There's nothing cool about this. But
there are people who genuinely love that, too, and if they do, that's fine. I just...
Well, and people who might associate it with a period in their lives. Like, for example, before Lindsay was a zygote.
Yeah. I mean, I hear this song, and I just automatically have, like, a weight loss support group montage in my head. So...
Wow. That's excellent.
Yeah, it does have a slight amount of, like, yeah, trying on clothes montage.
Richard Simmons was involved in this in some way.
I'm just picturing bad romantic comedies from this era that have, like, Billy Crystal.
Yeah.
It's also the era that studio engineers got their reverb units. You know,
oh, there's digital,
yeah, so
that too.
That's why everything also sounds so artificial.
It really does sound like everything in that song is being taken out of a box.
Yeah. You know?
But I mean, Aretha Franklin, that wasn't like a big comeback record for her. She had hits right up to that, like Who's Zoomin' Who, mm-hmm. and she had.
I'll play my clunker then. I'm sorry, you just reminded me. Should I do it?
Oh, good, please.
Yeah. Okay. So, I think there's nothing more than to just play it. And I'll leave the mics open. You guess who the second singer is. If you already know it, don't guess, but yeah. Okay, first voice is...
I have got you.
The chairman of the board.
Under my skin.
Mr. Blue Eyes.
I've got you. Deep in the heart of me. So deep in my heart, you're really a part of me. I've got you under my skin.
If one generation, the Sinatra generation, was going to get turned on to Bono, I'm not sure this is the one, right?
This is not the way to do it.
This actually makes the Bono generation reject Bono. I mean, no knock on. I mean, U2 has made a lot of great records, but Bono is afflicted with this horrible tendency to always sound like he thinks he's incredibly cool,
or that he could at times sing a crooning song like this one. So let's do one more.
I would sacrifice anything, come what might, for the sake of holding you near, in spite of a war.
Wait a minute, is he doing that falsetto?
Is that Bono?
The high part?
Yeah. And shouts in my ear.
Wow. Oh, he calls it. Now, I want to just say, I don't like this song at all. I think this is an abomination. But I do think that, I personally think Bono has one of the greatest voices in the history of rock music. I love his voice. I think he's an amazing singer.
He's in danger of putting on some horrifying affectations, though, particularly his kind of, like, fake beat poet.
He can be a little overwrought sometimes.
And rousing
pairing. And then
Frank Sinatra.
Don't email me, but
everything that man did was cool.
Yeah, and he was 75 when he did that. This was a duets record he did. He did it with a lot of people, and that Bono one was the one that really fell on its face.
This was another just not the single, but the album was just a gargantuan hit.
Yeah,
millions of people bought it.
It was, and it was one of the first records to do. A lot of the duets were done. They weren't in the same room.
Right.
It wasn't necessarily recorded, but they were done through. This is 1993, so they were done with like. The equivalent of a high-speed phone line, high-quality phone line.
Oh, so they were. It's not like Natalie Cole singing.
If I'm not mistaken, I should have looked this up beforehand. But I think two things were done. One were just recordings were done and sent, and in other cases, real time events.
let's see. Critical complaints stemming from production style. Oh, since the guest singers were not physically present with Sinatra, but instead were singing along to his pre-recorded vocal parts over a telecommunications link. So he wasn't even live when they were recording
it. He didn't want to be around Bono.
Yeah, I just imagine Frank Sinatra just being like, to hell with the lot of you.
My mom is actually a huge Bono fan. Like, everything that
play this for
he
her
does,
when the show's up.
I can't wait.
Yeah. Your mom's going to hate me for saying all those mean things about it.
I mean, I've actually never spoken those words in front of my mom. I've thought them, but I was afraid of what she would do to
me. A huge Bono fan, too.
I like Bono a lot. I'm not knocking you two. I'm not knocking Bono. But in certain situations, there's a bit of try-hard where he thinks he's unimaginably cool.
Speaking
of
clunkers,
you're so
Stephen.
Cool, Stephen, why don't you pick something?
I've been told I'm guilty of that myself.
He's so cool. But,
I think you should just go ahead and hit play on this one.
All right, good. Wow. I think that was a keytar.
On the rap, so Mike, here's a little story. I don't mind the keytar so much.
With the slot and a playing it cool with my homegirl.
Seems we never, ever agree. You like the movies and I like TV.
I take it serious and you take the life.
I go to bed early
and I party all night.
Our friends are saying
we ain't gonna last,
cause I move slowly
and baby I'm fast.
I like it quiet
and I love to shout,
but when we get together it just all works out.
That is a pairing of Paula Abdul and a rapping cartoon cat named MC Scat Cat, who, among other things, put out his own, not himself, there was an MC Scat Cat spin-off album called,
This like the Onion's worst record? Did you...
At least essential.
This was essential. I used to work at the Onion, and when we put together the least essential albums of the 90s, the winner, as it were, of the least essential album of the entire decade was The Adventures of MC Scat Cat and the Stray Mob. I love that he had his own group, and they were the Stray Mob. But among the incredibly misguided things about Opposites Attract, which again was a number one hit single, is that...
Feel free to take this out at any time.
I do love the fact that the rapping cartoon cat is the badass in this configuration. Like, Paula Abdul is the square one, and the cool one is the cartoon cat.
I remember the video. Didn't she dance with him at cartoon?
It was employing the groundbreaking animation technique as seen in Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
This might bring back some memories.
Things moving in the right direction. Try to fight it, but I'm telling you, Jack, it's useless. Opposites attract.
His science is too tight.
Is anyone going to dance with me at the high school dance?
Yeah. 1988, people.
Okay, well, I was out of high school.
I was born that year.
All right. Wow. Robin, you got a clunker for us?
I do not. I have one that you probably think is a clunker, but I think is awesome.
All right.
And actually, the thing that's interesting about this is that without any discussion between me, Lindsay, and Stephen for our clunkers, we all picked something from the 80s.
Right.
Totally unintentional.
No.
You don't think? No.
Well, I mean, it's easy to pull from that decade and find clunkers.
Well, this is a song that came out in 1986, and it was actually, I actually really, really like it. You're going to hate it. But it's Run DMC.
Oh, this is
like
not
this.
A clunker
with
at all.
Aerosmith.
This is
I like this.
You, necessary.
You like this song?
Yeah. Yeah, this is a complete non-clunker.
It's not a clunker
well,
for
it's
me.
Well, it's one of those odd pairings that actually did everybody better.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So, of course, Run DMC, biggest hip-hop group in the 80s, and one of the things they're often credited with is mainstreaming hip-hop, and this is one of the ways they did it, is by, you know, taking
a has-been band.
Ouch.
Well, the letters pour in.
Mixing music. And
man,
styles
by 86,
like this.
Aerosmith
was in the toilet. When
right. Well, that's
out.
So there.
Well,
that's
so. So okay. So what this song did, it broke hip hop into the mainstream. It was a huge hit. I've read that it's the first hip hop song that ever broke the top five in the Billboard Hot 100 ever.
Right.
That's amazing. And it totally, yes, it totally revived Aerosmith's career. They were just coming out of rehab, I think. Oh, you know, their albums were totally tanking. And it seemed like not long after this, they signed some huge deal. And then we got Love in an Elevator and all this other stuff that came out.
Thousands
yeah,
of hits,
you know, and huge. And also Rick Rubin produced this. And so this sort of launched his career. And I had a great video. Do you remember the video from the Steven Tyler
song.
Breaking Through the Wall? Well, we'll all agree then that this is just awesome and let's enjoy it. It's amazing to this is so 25 years later, Aerosmith is still on a run right now. Yeah. And I remember when this came out thinking, oh yeah, Aerosmith, those old guys, they haven't done anything in years, you know. And
well, I think one thing that jumps out at me about this, we played a couple of songs from the 80s that sound like hopelessly 80s. That doesn't.
No, not at all. Yeah. Sounds, actually, it sounds fresh.
Yeah, you know, and awesome. Another thing, it reminds me of a song that I totally would have brought if I had thought of it, but that does the same thing in reverse. Have you ever heard Anthrax teaming up with Public Enemy to do Bring the Noise?
Mm-mm.
And so they take an old Public Enemy song and make it more metal, but with Chuck D rapping. And it's absolutely incredible. It has this, it's just infused with a completely different energy than it had, and I think of that as a classic. And it's sort of somewhat in the same vein in this, where it's fusing together kind of hard rock and hip hop in ways that bring out the best of both.
And maybe that's the formula for when they work and when they don't. I mean, the Sinatra and Bono for me didn't work at all because it didn't make anything new. It just took Frank Sinatra down, right?
It also had no energy. It had no creative spark. It had no reason to exist.
Yeah. So maybe
and there's nothing in the Roots were even brushing against each other in that music. You know, like when the Black Keys hooked up with a number of hip hop artists this past year, you thought, Bob, that was sort of an odd pairing, but to me it was a very obvious pairing. And there's, I think, if you go deep enough in the Roots, they start getting tangled a whole lot more. But I mean,
well, the Nusrat and the Eddie Vedder, there, I can't think of Roots that connect there, but that works totally. Mm-hmm. But again, it does what Stephen was saying, where it brings in the old and the. Old and new, or two really different energies.
Well, the important word being, I think, energy. And if you look at Paula Abdul and MC Scat Cat now,
the chemistry on screen is electrifying.
MC Scat Cat was just coming out of rehab.
Yeah, it's, speaking of energy, and and comedy too. This never ceases to make me laugh, and I just thought that one of the weirdest things, William Shatner doing a pulp song with, what's his name? Ben Folds. Folds, yeah. And
can I just say, I'm hearing a lot of this throughout this
I think
whole
I did that. I think I hit that one. But
and you hit my mic twice. Stop hitting my microphone.
All right.
Why are you hitting yourself?
I hit him instead. That's the sound of you hitting Robin.
I'm just trying to care. It's not easy for me.
I know, I appreciate it a lot.
Quit leaning on the table. You're making.
I want to lean on the table.
You're making all these banging.
This is
noises.
Like, don't put your elbows on the table. It's like being at a bad dinner.
The table is the new nose whistle.
It might be.
That so enraged people in the last show.
I'm sorry, Bob. Go ahead.
So let's hear Comet People, William Shatner, Ben Folds, a song by Pulp.
God. I swear to
Hit
God.
Hit it, baby. Boy.
She came from Greece. She had a thirst for knowledge. She studied sculpture at St. Martin's College. That's where I caught her eye. She told me that her dad was loaded. I said, in that case, I'll have a rum and Coca-Cola. She said, fine. And in 30 seconds' time, she said, I want to live like common people. I want to do whatever common people do. I want to sleep with common people. I want to sleep with common people like you. Well, what else could I do? I said, I'll see what I can do. I took her to a supermarket. I don't know why, but I had to start it somewhere. So it started there. I said, pretend you've got no money. She just laughed and said, oh, you're so funny. I said, yeah? Well, I can't see anyone else smiling in here.
Are you sure?
You want to live like common people? You want to see whatever common people see? You want to sleep with common people? You want to sleep with common people like me? But she didn't understand.
She just smiled and held my hand. Rent a flat above a shop. Cut your hair and get a job. Smoke some flats and play some pool. Pretend you never went to school. But still you'll never get it right. When you're lying in bed at night.
And it gets better. Even more. We'll put the whole song online at npr.org/allsongs.
Is it... Do you genuinely love it because it's awesome, or is it just so weird and funny that William Shatner's doing this? That
yes to all of those. I mean, it's not that I hate it that I love it. I love it because his read is like perfect comic timing on this.
Yeah.
And it couldn't have, the inflection and the way he said every single thing couldn't have been better for me. So, and when you, it's hilarious.
You said at the beginning, you said, speaking of energy, and you went to, I thought I was making all these Star Trek connections, you know, like he's being transported, energy is being, but it made me think of the album that he did in the late 60s called The Transformed Man. Do you remember that one? It's a collection of William Shatner doing all these crazy versions of songs, like Mr. Tambourine Man.
Right. Yeah.
And he just goes nuts. I actually pulled up a little bit of Mr. Tambourine Man if you want to hear just the end of that
song.
Sure,
hang on one second.
That you do because you think that poor is cool.
Okay, that's one of that line.
Here's William Shatner almost 40 years... Oh, this is more than 40 years ago.
Place I'm going to.
Wait for it.
In the jingle.
Jangle morning. I'll come following you.
You sound so constipated.
Really?
Oh, wait, you gotta hear the very, very end. Sorry.
Mr. Tambourine Man!
Keep waiting.
Mr. Tambourine Man.
Hey. Mr. Tambourine Man.
You know, and Leonard Nimoy, Spock had some albums
come out
too.
In the same, what's the show? The annoying music show.
Oh yeah, Joe, yeah. Sure. You can hear that on there all the time.
Yeah, that's totally up their alley. So, do you have Lindsay? Do you have any pairings that are maybe more producer?
Yes, in fact, I do. I'm a big fan of mashups. I have an embarrassingly large collection of mashups in my library because the DJs give them away for free. So, of course, that's how they're going to build up.
Interesting. I never thought
about
that.
Right? I know.
Free music.
We should start giving this show away for free.
And my two favorite DJs, together they are called the Hood Internet. So I guess I am breaking the rules a little bit. These aren't really the artists collaborating. These are the DJs forcing the artists together.
Look, he got away with playing Mr. Tambourine Man. So
I really like what they do because I think they have incredible taste. And this is how I discovered a lot of the music was from the pairings that they just put out there. They do a lot with indie rock bands, you know, electronica, rap. This in particular is called 2 Weeks of Hip Hop. It's a mashup of a 90s hip hop group, Dead Prez, and Grizzly Bear. And I think it's just an amazing track. And they also have a bunch of other weird stuff with Snoop Dogg and Architecture in Helsinki, stuff like that.
Okay. The Hood Internet.
The Hood Internet.
It's bigger than hip hop, hip hop, hip hop. It's bigger than hip hop, hip hop, hip hop, hip hop.
One thing about music, when it hit, you feel no pain. White folks that controls your brain, I know better than that. That's game, man, we ready for that. Two soldiers head of the pack, matter of fact, who got the gun? And where my army at? Rather attack and not react. Back to beats, it don't reflect on how many records get sold on sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Whether your projects put on hold in the real world. These just people with ideas, they just like me and you. When the smoke and camera disappear again, the real world is bigger than all these fake records. Way po-fo got the millions and my woman's disrespected. If you check 1, 2, my word of advice to you is just relax. Just do what you got to do. If that don't work, then kick the fact. If you a fighter, rider, bada, flame igniter, crowd exciter, or you wanna just get high and just say it. But then if you a lie, pants on fire, wolf cry, agent with a Y, I'm gon' know it when I play it. It's bigger than
Biggie Smalls, if we don't get them, they gon' get us all. I'm down for running up on them in they city hall. We ride for y'all, all my dogs, stay real. Don't thank me, record deals gon' feed your season, pay your bills because they not. MCs get a little bit of love and think they hot. Talking about how much money they got. All y'all records sound the same. I'm sick of that fake thug R&B rap scenario all day on the radio. Same scenes in the video, monotonous material. Y'all don't hear me though.
It so works.
It so works.
Yeah, I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
And I like it a lot better than 2 Weeks, how it was originally done. So
the Grizzly Bear song,
Sometimes I wonder, can you mash up just about anything and make it work? And then I hear something like this, and I think, no, this is really well thought out.
Yeah,
someone really, really, really.
You just have to be able to know that those two songs are puzzle pieces.
You have to have ears for it. And I get people are like, eh, you know, it's just two DJs taking stuff. They're not really doing much with it except putting it on a computer and pressing some buttons.
Take any talent to do anything like
that. I disagree completely. Yeah. I think you have to have a great ear for it and know what works. And some of their stuff doesn't work. A lot of their stuff does. And they have tons and tons of mashups that are just so amazing. And they make you rethink the songs entirely. Mm-hmm. So
I can't remember what there was some song you and I wanted to mash up as a joke one time. I can't for the life of me remember what it was, but I remember trying very, very hard. I have all the software to do it, and I couldn't do it. I could not get it figured out for the life of me.
Yeah,
it's really, really hard.
The notion that there's no skill involved, it's like, well, do it.
If there's
no skill involved, try it.
Because
I couldn't imagine, first of all, thinking of those two songs to put together.
Yeah.
And then actually grafting them together in a mix.
So it's the Hood Internet.
Yeah. Check them out.
It was a Portishead song.
It was a Portishead song.
What on earth were we doing? Well, you know what? Let's take this offline.
Okay. And we can actually spend the next 10 minutes and just figure this out.
If you guys don't mind, Bob,
let me just go through my library. I just have a few songs.
Yeah, hold on. A Bondi, no. Aha, no.
I don't have aha.
So this isn't really a completely unexpected pairing, and I know that you love this too. It's Laurie Anderson with William S. Burroughs from her 1984 album Mr. Heartbreak, which, by the way, we got a lot of heat for saying there was no good music in the 80s, and obviously there was lots of great music in the 80s. Not a lot of it was getting played on the radio, but just like now. But this album came out in 1984, and I was thinking it's really funny to me because I do not like talky, you know, speak singing, not really singing. I've never liked that. And then I think, you know what? But I listened to this album nonstop all through high school. So I don't know why this one works in a lot of stuff that's come since then hasn't worked for me. But this is, I think part of it is it's just funny. It's
I think
just
somebody
so
planted
weird.
An idea in your brain when you were sleeping.
Yeah, okay, I won't go to that. I was going to do a whole aside there, but it's not worth getting into. But anyway, this is Laurie Anderson and with William S. Burroughs doing the speaking part in it. It's the last track of her album, Mr. Heartbreak. Oh, and by the way, this is Adrian Belew on guitar. I know one of your favorites, Bob. Mm.
Big bald head, disappearing behind the boulevard. It's Sharky's night. Yeah. It's Sharky's night tonight. And the manager says, Sharky, he's not at his desk right now. Could I take a message? Sharky says, hey, Kamisabe, long time no see. He says, hey, sport, you connect the dots, you pick up the pieces. He says, you know, I can see two tiny pictures of myself, and there's one in each of your eyes. And they're doing everything I do. Every time I light a cigarette, they light up theirs. I take a drink, and I look in, and they're drinking too. It's driving me crazy, it's driving me nuts.
Please tell me that you love the guitar.
I do love the guitar on this. My Adrian Belew, anti-Adrian Belew, when I go off the cuff is when I listen to what he did to King Crimson. That's, you know, that's a whole other conversation.
Oh, wait a second.
Emergency, Sharky, yeah. White courtesy telephone, please.
That's awesome. I love that.
I wanted to know what you thought of that, Lindsay.
Yeah.
No, I really enjoyed that. I love the guitar. It doesn't sound 80s to me.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's incredible. We just played this album over and over and over again.
That's great.
High school.
It's probably why you're here.
You know, the thing that is amazing, too, about this is how did this record and these artists find their way to Abilene, Kansas?
Yeah, right.
Middle of nowhere, 6,000 people, and somehow we managed to find Laurie Anderson and Adrian Belew. Peter Gabriel was on that record. It was incredible.
Did you find that without the aid of, like, an older sibling? Or?
It came from a friend, and I did, you know, I think maybe that friend got it from a friend of his parents or something, you know, it did come from someone older outside of the group.
For all the hard times we give major labels, mm-hmm. not necessarily just we, but people in general, this is the kind of stuff where they were successful. This is Warner Brothers.
Oh, Warner? Yeah.
You know, they did great. There are many things and reasons why major labels were good. They could get into Abilene, Kansas, you know, or wherever Abilene is.
Of course, nowadays, anybody can get to Abilene, Kansas.
That's right.
If you are living in Abilene, Kansas right now, you are so lucky compared to when Robin, I mean, we're talking 60, 70 years ago.
Ouch.
I'm just thinking these skinny white kids with their mullets, you know, driving around in their pickup trucks. You know, total backwoods, how we found that stuff.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. Love
that. So you had a mullet?
He buried the lead.
Yeah.
Dude, it was like mink. It was parted in the middle, and both of the little parts in the corners, they were just feathered back. It was just like,
can we blog post
so
this?
Beautiful.
I had an absolutely gargantuan, like, sort of Richard Marx.
We need a haircut blog post.
Richard Marx.
It was definitely Richard. It was very, you know what it very was, much was? I don't know how many people are going to get this reference, but it was very Michael Damian.
I know the name.
He was on The Young and the Restless, and had a big hit with a cover of Rock On.
The Richard Marx is also
Richard
Marx
is also
touchdown.
True. But it was just a massive main. All right, so it's my turn.
Yes.
All right. Well, I was gonna do Lee Scratch Perry teaming up with Andrew WK, but since we just did a crazy old man a moment ago, I'm gonna go instead with something prettier and very successful. Nick Cave had an album called Murder Ballads, which was a case of truth in advertising because the entire album was nothing but murder ballads, and he would sing them with you know, sort of different collaborators, and one of the most successful ones was a collaboration with Kylie Minogue, who was not necessarily known for
her murder ballads,
for her flair for murder ballads, sort of a dance pop singer of some renown. And
dance pop, you say that with such a harsh
I did not at all. Well, I mean, at the time I knew her primarily for her cover of The Locomotion, but
which is fine.
She's made a bunch of superb dance pop records. I'm not at all besmirching the name of Kylie Minogue in any way, shape, or form, but it's an unexpected pairing, and I think they're both the better for it. You know, it helped bring Nick Cave somewhat more into the mainstream, being paired with her. It gave her, I think, additional credibility that she continues. You know, I'm not saying this is the entire root cause of it, but it gave her some credibility that she continues to enjoy. And this particular song is called Where the Wild Roses Grow.
If you hear the show and get inspired to think of other odd pairings, we'll stretch the meaning of odd pairings if you want to not just people who work together, but maybe mashups, maybe there are other things, and maybe we'll come up with another show out of it. But there'll be a link on the All Songs Considered homepage, npr.org/allsongs, that takes you to the blog. And you can follow us at Twitter at All Songs. And we all have something.
We all have handles. Yeah. Robin, what's your Twitter handle?
NPROBIN.
I am at I Dislike Stephen, STEPHEN.
The most perfectly appropriate Twitter name of all time.
It never gets old for those who dislike me. Lindsay?
I'm El Sancheesy.
How do you spell that, Lindsay? I don't follow you on Twitter. Speaking of crazy mashups, we've mashed up All Songs Considered
Lindsay
with Lindsay
Sancheesy.
Sanchez.
I like that.
L-S-A-N-C-H-E-E-Z-Y.
Excellent.
Bob, I want you to be Bob Sancheesy.
That's awesome. That is great. Yeah. Or Boylan Sancheesy. Something.
That sounds like a dish.
Boiling
cheese.
It sounds like something I would eat.
Boiling cheese.
Yeah, like
it's a Wisconsin dish.
It would just be a wad of like starch and cheese.
Oh,
what are we going to do again? We're going to play some music?
Oh, yeah. We were going to play a song by Nick Cave and Kylie Minogue. Great. The song is called Where the Wild Roses Grow.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
They call me the wild rose, but my name was Eliza Day. Why they call me it, I do not know. For my name was Eliza Day.
From the first day I saw her, I knew she was the one. She stared in my eyes and smiled, for her lips were the color of the roses that grew down the river, all bloody and wild.
When he knocked on my door and entered the room, my trembling subsided in his sure embrace. He would be my first man, and with a careful hand he wiped out the tears that ran down my face. They call me the wild rose, but my name was Eliza.
second day I brought her a flower. She's more beautiful than any woman I've seen. I said, do you know where the wild roses grow? So sweet and scarlet and free.
On the second day he came with a single red rose. He said, give me your loss and your sorrow. I nodded my head as I lay on the bed. If I show you the roses, will you follow? They call me the wild rose. But my name was Eliza Day. Why they call me that, I do not know. For my name was Eliza Day. On the third day, me to the river. He showed me the roses and we kissed. And the last thing I heard was a muttered word as he knelt above me with a rock in his fist.
On the last day I took her where the wild roses grow. She lay on the bank, the wind lied as a thief, and I kissed her goodbye. Said all beauty must die. And I leant down and planted a rose between her teeth.
They call me the wild rose. But my name was Eliza Day. Why they call me, it's I do not know. For my name was Eliza. My name was Eliza Day. For my name was Eliza Day.